Thank you very much, John, and thank you, Cedar, ANZ, and ANZIF for inviting me to speak today and also putting me on after Richard Cotty, which is always a tough act to follow, so you try not to compete. Therefore, I've got some visuals for you, as well as I'm not going to go with the rhetoric approach. I'll talk today a little bit about power in New South Wales and obviously the future of gas here, but the overarching message out of this presentation, as you will appreciate given the privatisation debate that's going on, is that here in New South Wales one should anticipate and embrace uncertainty, because nothing's for sure, and keeping your options open and maintaining that optionality is going to be key, not just in the privatisation debate but also in looking at what's going to happen from a fuel perspective in terms of growing the power generation business here. I'll talk a little bit about who True Energy is for those of you who are not familiar. I'll look at the demand situation here in New South Wales going forward and the sources of generation and fuel that are going to meet that demand, and then talk a little bit about the single alternative to gas-fired generation, which is coal with carbon capture and storage, which is currently proposed by the government, having really talked or taken the option to opt out of the nuclear debate. And we'll talk a little bit. I'll talk a little bit about the viability of that from both a commercial and timescale perspective. True Energy, just briefly, is an integrated business with generation, retail customers, and gas. We've got about 1.3 million customers, predominantly in Victoria. The customers here in New South Wales haven't really been that attractive, certainly not as attractive in the southern states in the past. A generation portfolio that is somewhat representative of the kind of challenges that Australia faces. We've got a large brown coal generator with a carbon footprint of around 15 million tonnes a year. We also have gas-fired generation, and I'll talk about the gas-fired generation we're building here in New South Wales. And we also have a portfolio of renewable businesses, predominantly wind, but also some solar and recently a geothermal project in South Australia. And we also have some gas assets in Victoria, gas storage here in New South Wales and up in Queensland. About a year ago, we launched our climate strategy. This was done for several reasons. First of all, in response to stakeholders, customers, shareholders, about the potential risk of having a large brown coal generator. We also took the view that if the debate was going to get live, and it has got live, we needed to really put our credentials forward and earn our way to the table. Certainly over the last 6 months, as we've seen this vigorous debate around emissions trading develop, those companies that haven't anticipated and moved their portfolio and businesses towards a greener footprint or a greener profile haven't had as much voice in Canberra as policy has been developed. One of the targets that we set ourselves was to reduce the carbon intensity of the business by 2020, and then by 2035 to reduce the overall emissions. These targets preceded the current government's targets, but they were based on a significant amount of technical analysis on what was feasible, not just what was commercially feasible with the existing plant, what was feasible in terms of gas and fuel coming on board, and what was feasible in terms of carbon capture and storage, because absent nuclear, carbon capture and storage is the only way with a predominantly coal-fired generation base, this country is going to meet these significant carbon reduction emissions targets. And as I'll show later, the carbon capture and storage isn't, whilst it's viable today in small scale, we don't see it as being technically and commercially viable in scale until beyond 2020. Certainly not at a level that is going to allow a wholesale change in the profile of the coal generation in Victoria and New South Wales. But look at demand here in New South Wales, but look at demand first of all across the national electricity market. Obviously demand here in New South Wales, everyone's familiar, is growing, and we reckon it's growing around 400-500 megawatts each year, so that's the equivalent of one Tallawarra, which is a 400 megawatt combined cycle plant we're building down near Wollongong. It's the equivalent of one of those per year. The Owen inquiry suggested that baseload generation was going to be required from around 2014. There are going to be three key drivers behind the increased in capacity here in New South Wales and across the market. The first is obviously growth. That's the 400 megawatts a year in New South Wales and the significant growth that we're seeing elsewhere in the market, certainly in Queensland. We're also going to see a lot of new generation capacity coming through the MRAT targets. The 20% renewable energy target by 2020 means a substantial amount of renewable energy needs to be put into the system. And one thing about the renewable energy, certainly the renewable energy we have to date, which is predominantly from wind, is it also needs complementary peaking capacity, gas-fired peaking capacity, given that it doesn't have that baseload quality that the current coal-fired generation mix has. So you'll see a significant amount here of the yellow column, which is renewable generation, also complemented by that peaking generation, and also baseload generation as well. So three key drivers for that increase in capacity. One is the MRET target, one is the underlying growth in the economy, and the third is closure of existing high carbon intensity generation and replacement of that by other generation sources. And that will predominantly be replacement in the short to medium term by gas-fired generation. Now, one of the challenges as we look forward into the crystal ball is to see what's the mix going to be and where is gas and what role is gas going to play in the fuel mix here. Because now that Richard and Karen at Origin and Santos and others are looking at LNG export facilities, we are facing an upward movement in gas prices, which is going to drive gas prices up to a global gas price. And therefore, that's going to have a major impact on whether gas is the primary source of long-term generation here, or it's more attractive to to sell that gas into the international markets and retain the coal-fired generation base here, notwithstanding the carbon price. On the left, you can see current business as usual, predominantly black coal, with brown coal making up about a quarter of the current generation mix. By 2025, based on the anticipated reductions in the carbon footprint, and this includes MRET, we're seeing other technologies, which is predominantly MRET, renewable technologies, coming at around 20%, a large portion of gas by generation, and gas with carbon capture and storage, potentially. If the gas price does kick up to international levels, then much of that gas is going to be exported, so we see once again coal coming back as the predominant form of generation. And I would suggest that this is the most likely scenario, and that's going to be coal with carbon capture and storage. So the key then is to look at, well, how viable is that carbon capture and storage, and when's it going to come on? And I'll talk a little bit about that later. Is the gas there for us? Well, yes, it is. The map on the left is outdated by about 12 months, but you needn't read the fine print. There are significant amounts of 2P reserves and contingent reserves, and more being proven up by the week as various companies look to market themselves or enhance their profile in the share market. So we don't have any concerns about the amount of gas that's there. We do have concerns about the infrastructure and how we get that gas to our power stations, and Richard alluded to that, and I think that there's an enormous amount of investment needs to go into the gas pipeline network here in the East Coast to ensure that we can move that gas around to where the generation is required. On the right, you can see the gas demand by sector. And for those of you at the back, I'll just point it out here. You've got the residential demand, which is pretty constant there, industrial demand pretty constant, and then the demand from generation. And that here reaches an inflection point, which depends on where that on how rapidly renewable energy comes in to supplant that gas-fired generation. So there are a number of different factors here that impact the demand on gas. How quickly is renewable technology actually going to come in? We know what the MRET targets have been proposed, but how realistic and how quickly and how effectively can renewable energy be brought in to actually meet those targets? And the second factor is what's going to happen with the international market, as I talked about before. If we have a carbon-constrained world, but then if the gas is put into the international marketplace, there's a huge amount of international demand for LNG, then that's going to have a it's not looking like a particularly rosy picture in the long term for having gas-fired generation here in Australia if gas prices move up for the current $3 level up to $7 or $8. So there's a lot of different options here. There's a lot of different outcomes here, which makes actually your planning scenarios, given the lead time for new generation is probably between 4 to 6 years, it makes that planning and implementation of development of new generation extremely challenging. Now, carbon capture and storage, and there's a lot of discussion about this simply because it is the only horse that the government is running in the debate on how we're going to keep the coal-fired generation going in a carbon-constrained world. So we've taken a lot of time to look at what the alternatives are for carbon capture and sequestration, what the technical viability of it is, and how much it's going to cost. Now, looking first of all at the relative cost base here, the top chart here shows the cost of generation with carbon storage, and that's around $90 a megawatt hour. You can see the second line there, the green line, is the gas price. Gas fired generation moving up from the current $3 gas price up based on different CO2 costs to $4, around $5 at the $20 carbon price. And at about a $40 carbon price, you hit a gas price of around $6. And that's the point of crossover there. That's the point where coal-fired generation with carbon capture and storage becomes more commercially viable than gas-fired generation. Now, this is just based on carbon price and its impact on the gas. On gas, it's not price. It's not based on the market forces as gas goes into the international export markets and is priced off Henry Hub or international gas prices rather than domestic prices. Secondly, we looked at how technically feasible is this. There's been a lot of, as I said, talk about how carbon capture and storage is viable today. Well, yes, it is, but in a very, very small, very, very small levels there. Working with Schlumberger, we've looked in Victoria at a number of different sites onshore and offshore. Identification of a range of the different storage sinks there with a view to not really looking at anything that would take less than 50 million tonnes of CO2, which is the equivalent of about 3 years of carbon emissions from a Loy Yang A or a Yulon. But looking at these different plays, selecting the development of those, doing the geotechnical work and definition of the projects, and actually then going through the execution of the project, assuming that you have a fair following wind as far as government regulations concerned and cooperation on the infrastructure, we're not looking at a timescale that is less than about 10 years. So this is not going to be viable for the first projects until around 2020. Therefore, around the middle of the 2020 to 2030 decade is realistically the time when carbon capture and storage is going to become commercially and technically viable. That means that between now and then, absent any alternative form of generation, we are going to see a lot more gas-fired generation. It is the fuel of the next 10 years in terms of new generation here, but longer term, I see black coal and brown coal coming back into the fore as the fuel of choice, and certainly as the gas markets here become more internationalized with LNG export capability, we'll see predominantly most of the gas going offshore. Looking here immediately at what we're doing in New South Wales, as John mentioned earlier, we're close to completing the construction of the Tallawarra Power Station near Wollongong. It's a 400 megawatt combined cycle plant, which Alstom is building for us. It does have a very low emission footprint. It's the lowest fossil fuel emissions of any of the projects on the grid at around 0.4 tonnes of CO2 per megawatt hour. That compares to about 0.8 tonnes for black coal and about 1.35 tonnes for brown coal. So as a third of the brown coal, of the CO2 footprint of brown coal, it is very much the kind of fuel and generation that we'll be looking at putting in over the next 10 years. It's also been extremely strong, I think, in terms of the development of Wollongong and the Illawarra region. So moving back into New South Wales, there is going to be a significant amount of new generation required. We'll be putting in another unit at Tallawarra when this current one is completed. We'll be starting the development and construction of a second 400 megawatt unit. We see that representing about a year's growth in New South Wales demand, so we should be seeing a lot more gas-fired generation there, which therefore means that proving up the gas reserves here in terms of the coal seam gas reserves in New South Wales is going to be very important going forward. Overall, the current government policy in terms of CPRS is going to have a huge impact, obviously, on the type of generation that's built. In the short to medium term, as I said, I see gas-fired generation for base load and intermediate load. And whilst we have significant targets for renewable generation, given the intermittent nature of that generation, we're going to actually see a lot more open cycle gas peaking facilities as well to supplement that. I think here in New South Wales, the picture is rosy as more and more of the New South Wales companies develop and prove up their gas reserves. We do need from government and also from the investment market, the infrastructure investment market, investment in a broader gas pipeline network there. But I do believe also that is going to come. I think there's a lot of capital waiting to move forward on that. But obviously in the shorter term, a lot of things are being clogged up by, first of all, federal government policy on emissions trading, and secondly, New South Wales' inability to move forward with their decision on privatisation. So hopefully in both of those in the next 6 to 9 months, we'll have some resolution. And finally, carbon capture and storage. It is the only horse that the government's running. It isn't going to be technically viable until 2020 and beyond. In terms of the cost, as well as the technical viability, it does add a significant amount of cost to what has been a very low-cost and reliable generation source from our black and brown coal in the past. So factoring that into the economy is going to be a major challenge for Treasury and government over the next year. Thank you very much.